All right, welcome to another episode of the Empowered Perspective Podcast. I go to by the name of Demiso Josie alongside.
Spence is here.
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. It's been a long day.
It has been a long day. What we've been up to, though? Tell the people what we've been up to.
Oh, man, we have breaking news today.
Yes.
So, for the first time, we're going to be actually on the radio station, 99.9.
Oof.
That's in New Jersey today.
Let's make some noise for that. We're on the radio. Power Perspective is on the radio.
We're coming up.
We're coming up.
And we're here to take over. That's what it actually
was. So, South Jersey, we're going to come hit you hard with the radio show. Power Perspective is on the radio. The format's still going to be like the podcast. We just take it on the radio with a couple of different segments that's going on out there. So, made that announcement today on my man Gary Monteroso's show on What's on Tap. Listen, that was a great show.
I like his show. Not the fact because he had good content, but they just kept giving away free stuff.
Free stuff.
I'm not a drinker. But they kept giving away free stuff.
We need some free stuff on the Empowerment Perspective podcast.
Our table is bare. All we have is a book.
Yeah, we're going to get to that book in a minute. But let's go back to the previous podcast, Booty Yoga.
Booty Yoga. I did some research on it.
Did you?
And I think that we're on to something where it looks just like a strip club.
Oh.
So I'm going to the bank whenever you're ready, and we're going to actually see if we can actually turn her yoga studio into a strip club.
I'm going to have to tell my wife we're going to the library that day, my wife. We're not going to...
We're going to Temple's Library. So if you come and you can't find us, just know we're there.
We're going to beat up in there.
We're going to be somewhere in the stacks.
We also introduced a new person that I'd like to welcome to the Empowerment Perspective family. Dr. Kyle was in the building.
Kyle, our sports genius. He knows everything about sports.
Yes, he definitely will be on the podcast here and there. And we're working on some things. I spoke to him today. We're going to be working on some things. We got some things going to work with that. So shout out to Dr. Kyle. We are back in wonderful Hamilton, New Jersey, the Blue Berry capital of the world.
Absolutely.
So get some
more cupcakes.
Shout out to Cassiano's. Thanks for having us again. Your gracious host. And if you're in Hamilton, they ran on Route 54. Make sure you check them out. Come get in and get your coffee on. They got some desserts up in here. I think they just opened up a little side room on the side. I know they had a little graduation party going on over there, so they got catering. Anything you want in Hamilton, you can come right here to Cassiano's apparently and get a party, eat cakes and drink coffee.
Yes, I like Cassiano.
It is a great spot here. It's a nice day outside. I know you probably see me sweating on here. Been ripping and running, setting this up, radio stuff, soccer stuff. It never stops, man. The grind never stops.
That's what it is. It's always a grind.
It's all good. That episode was good. We also got some work going on with Alicia Negron. She's going to be putting together some videos for her Zumba, so you guys can have access to that. So we're working on that. So we're just going to keep moving here at the Empowerment Perspective and working on some things. In the future, we're in Atlanta. We're going down to the A.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Hey, here we come.
Hey, we're coming down there.
So some of my good friends that's waiting to get on the podcast. Yes. And then we have a speaking engagement down there,
We're hitting up the Innovative Schools Summit again. Shout out to them. We're going to be speaking on how to reach and teach today's hip-hop generation.
Yes.
Apparently, it's a hot topic because every time we go to speak somewhere, the room's starting to fill up.
Absolutely.
And they're starting to ask questions and stuff. So it's definitely good to be out there and doing that thing. Before we introduce our guests on the show, we got a segment that we've been talking about, taking it personal.
Yes.
And I'm going to take it personal.
What you got?
We did this episode on Suck It Up Buttercup.
Yes.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Everywhere I go, people telling me I need to drink water.
Yes, you're famous.
Right.
For not drinking water, though.
But I'm not the only one that don't drink water.
No, but you have made it popular not to drink water.
How you gonna tell me to do something that you ain't doing yourself?
It's easy. Everybody's a critic.
Taking it personal. I'm also taking it personal because, I'm going to say you brought a friend with you that refused to be on a podcast.
Yes.
I'm taking that personal because I need somebody to go in on you.
I'm looking for somebody.
Listen, all the people out here that know Mr. Petty, Mr. Kareem Petty, if you want to be on a podcast for the simple fact of roasting him, hit me up. I'll make sure you get on. We have a nice little line and make sure he gets it. So I'm definitely taking it personal. So today on our podcast, we got the doctor, Frank Reneski, in the house today. This is somebody, the first time I actually met him and actually had an idea of what he did. He was a principal in a school. You're not going to say, he can talk about the school later if he wants to. And I went to this Renaissance show, Case.
Okay.
right? And when you talk about somebody being passionate about what they do and really caring about kids.
So this is the guy you were telling me about?
This is the guy I was telling you about, right? So the first time I did it, I think they were doing something with the Wizard of Oz, right? And he was the wizard. And I just saw his kids was so into it. And I saw that he was so into it and the passion that he had for children and education. And I was like, one day, if I'm a principal, I want that energy right there. And I actually kind of stole his idea and took something back to Hamilton. I don't know if they still do it, but we did a little Oscars thing out of there. And it came and inspired from that. Then I heard a story about him. I don't know if it was Peter Pan or not, but apparently somebody told me that he was afraid of heights, but he was still trying to do the Peter Pan thing down this you know how he flies through the air or whatever.
Now, Peter Pan, maybe a superhero.
Maybe it was a superhero.
Maybe, yeah.
I need you to toughen that up just a little bit.
I wanted to soften it up, Peter Pan.
I never did look good in tights, but that's another story for another topic, another podcast.
Yeah. But every time I talk to this guy, I mean, he's definitely somebody for children and education, and he's doing wonderful things now. Got his book out here. We'll talk about that in a minute, but I would like to definitely welcome Dr. Rudesky on the podcast. Make some noise for you.
Thanks, guys.
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing awesome. I appreciate you guys taking the time. Thanks for having me, and thanks for coming to me here in Hamilton.
No doubt. Thanks for agreeing to be on. Let's talk about your educational journey. I know you said it'd probably take about 10-15 minutes to explain how you got to educate. It's fine. We don't have no time limit here on the Power Perspective. We just go in. So let's talk about how did you get into education in the first place?
Well, almost everything I do is meandering at best. When I was in first grade, Sister Helen told us, someday, by the grace of God, you'll find out what your vocation will be. And we had absolutely no idea what she was talking about. We were 6 years old. Oh, wow. But 20-some years later, when I walked into the classroom for the first time, I figured it out. She was talking about our calling, what we're supposed to do, where we'll have the biggest difference and make the most impact. So that's what she was talking about. But now my path, first of all, education was not important in my house. Neither one of my parents graduated from high school. As a matter of fact, when I got ready to go to the University of San Francisco after attending community college, my dad, I remember, he looked at me, he said, "Son, you got a job. You're making $3.25 an hour. You sure you want to do this?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm out. Absolutely."
Because I like money. When you say three, that's like $3.
That's like $3.25
an
hour.
And a quarter.
Yeah, my old job was making $3. They kind of stole me away from that. You know, for 25 cents more an hour.
Go ahead, continue.
Yeah, I was just counting money. But anyway, so when I went to the University of San Francisco, which is 3,010 miles from where I was living on the East Coast, went to the employment office. There were two jobs listed.
Right.
Elevator operator and magician, working at a magic shop. No experience necessary.
Huh.
So I said, yeah, that's me. I'm going to Fisherman's Wharf. And that's what I did. I learned, I knew no magic, but I had always been interested in it. So they taught me the trick, and the target market was tourists. So I would actually learn a trick. 5 minutes later, I would show it to a tourist. Ended up doing some performing on the street, and had a blast. It was the most fun I ever had. So I started to realize what passion meant. And came back to the East Coast, opened up a magic store in Wildwood on the boardwalk. Had it for 3 years. My rent went from $3,500 to about $25,000. Thought it was time maybe to look into something else.
So that $3.25 wasn't helping.
$3.25 and that. The minimum wage is probably about five bucks an hour, you know, by then. But I started substitute teaching in the winter. They shut off my water October 1st, so I couldn't have the magic shop anyway. I performed on places like Donald Trump's yacht. Yes, that Donald Trump.
Wow.
And did a lot of high roller parties. Did an escape act where I was chained up, handcuffed, nailed in a box, thrown in a river. Yes, I did escape. That's always a question. Did you get out? Yes. But anyway, one day when I was substitute teaching, this guy, Stanley Kleist, he was a middle school principal, looked like a cartoon character, came up to me, and he said, "You should think about becoming a teacher." And he just walked away. I'm like, "No, Mr. Kleist, well, give me a little more." He said, "You're good with kids." So actually, I did look into it, went back, got my certification, did my student teaching, walked into the classroom for the first time, and that's when I realized this is what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
Still magic. I still do magic. Still one of my passions, but education became my calling.
Right.
I have a question. I don't mean to cut it because
yeah, go ahead.
You keep talking about this magic. All right. I have this thing called student loans. Can you somehow magically make that disappear?
I mean, I get this email all the time about making student loans disappear. It's a little bit different. They'll find you.
they come in for their money.
Yes.
All the time we talk about educators and their first time in a classroom, and everyone has some sort of a story, or they remember the horror story of the first time in that classroom. What was that experience like for you in that classroom the first time?
I loved it. It was a lot of positive anxiety for me. Mm-hmm. And when I started teaching 1986-87 school year, it was just technology influence was just at the beginning stages. Mm-hmm. There was no research on it. I had a computer class at the University of San Francisco, and that's actually how I got hired. Yeah. They go, you had a computer class? You're going to do our new computer lab. Mm. Applied for a grant, got 10 IBM PCs with floppy disks. Mm. Yeah, they shook up and down, the floppy disks. And but it was amazing to me because there was a lot of energy going on.
Gotcha.
Love the kids, love to hear their stories.
Uh-huh.
And I treated them like human beings. Right. I remember, what kind of teacher do I want to be? I want to be the kind of teacher that I liked when I was in school.
Right.
The kind of teacher that, when I felt in that chair, made me feel like a human being, not just a number.
Right.
And that's how I proceeded.
Wow.
And I figured it out.
Right.
I figured it out along the way. Because, as I said, I started doing my own research before any of it came out. But it was... It was an amazing experience. I still am an educator, but... I got in a classroom, and I found out that you're such an influencer. You are there's leadership. Leadership is tied into education, and that's the segue into talking about my book when we get to that.
Yeah, we'll get there in a second. But you mentioned you've been in education for a while. How has it changed or evolved? How have you seen, as it progressed, is it, really cyclical, meaning things that happened in 87 is still the same things you're seeing now? Like, what did that look like? Is it a difference from now to then?
This is what I discovered. I mean, it's no secret, but great teaching is great teaching. Great teachers are great teachers. You can give them tools, and they just expand their repertoire, their bag of magic tricks, I call it. But the bureaucracy is just killing us. Mm-hmm. It's driving people away from teaching. Mm-hmm. There was a time when, and I don't know if you were in education at the time, but they discovered that we should have a minimum starting salary for teachers in the state of New Jersey. Wow, what a novel approach. Let's pay them. Mm. They all have college degrees. Mm. A lot of them are going after master's degrees. Maybe we should pay them like they're professionals. Mm. And we were headed in the right direction. Right? You guys can relate to that.
Yeah.
But we're in the cycle of bureaucracy again, where we need to get through that. We need to get over that. And we need to, again, start attracting the best people to what we do.
Mm.
And figure it out. Do you want do you want your kids spending one third of their day, and if you don't include sleep, one half of their day with the most qualified or the least qualified? Do you want every teacher to inspire your kid? Which is how it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Every teacher in every class should be inspiring your kids, but that's not happening.
No.
So we need to get back to attracting the best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember when my daughter first started to go to college, my oldest one, and she was actually in education for a while, an education major. And I see her headed back there at some point. But hey, what do you want to take in college? Teaching? Well, what the heck do you want to do that?
Right.
And this is coming from teachers.
Right.
So it's kind of disappointing. So perception is reality, and we need to bring that reality back to what it really is, that perception.
Right. What about the system? And I'm going to say that because if you really followed a student throughout the course of a day, you would be bored as an adult, like sitting in the classroom. I know you have to have great teachers and things, but going class back to back to back, their day seems to be really, really boring. Like, and I see kids like looking to have that zombie look in it.
Like, you want to pull their hair out.
Right, want to pull their hair out. Is the system designed, should it be designed differently in terms of how students go through their day?
Well, I think, how about this? It's another novel approach to education. Why don't you ask the kids what they want?
We talk about that all the time.
I mean, that's crazy. And that's where I get some of my great ideas before we stick them in a box. You want some honesty, ask a five-year-old, okay? Mm-hmm. And that five-year-old will tell you exactly how you look. Mm-hmm. Hey, how do I look? You know what? Hey, Dad, I don't know, man. I'm not feeling that jacket with that shirt.
Right.
You know, and plus you got a hair hanging out of your ear. So yeah, right. you can get an honest answer. But then yes. We teach them. We stick them in a box. Uh-huh. We overtest them. We underteach them. And we don't ask them what they really want.
Right.
I used to approach it. Every class was a performance.
Yeah.
And yeah, we want the kids, we want to inspire them, we want them to learn, we want to create great thinkers.
Right.
We don't want to create great places for them to think, but they have to be inventors and thinkers. And I use this term right now in leadership where we have to attract the heretics, the outliers, and the disruptors.
Mm-hmm.
And those are terms that heretics I got from Seth Godin for one of his books, Tribes. Outliers is Malcolm Gladwell.
Yep.
And disruptors is from my own observations. Mm-hmm. These kids need to come in and disrupt and in a positive way.
Right.
You know, I'll take that energy any day over a kid that is zombie-like, right. as you started to say at the beginning. But yeah, we need to change it. It needs to be changed.
Right.
And that starts, where does that start? It starts in pre-service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're attracting people to the field and now you're teaching them how to teach, well, that's another novel approach, isn't it? You know? And we can't keep them in that box. You got to tear down that box, tear down the walls,
right.
You know, recycle the box. Or build a spaceship out of it, whatever you want to do.
Right,
but
right. So we can dive into a little bit of leadership here, just in terms of hiring practices. The way my perspective is this: like, I'll use a different. I'm not going to use education. I'll use football, for example. I can teach you how to play football,
yes.
But I can't teach you how to have passion for the game and love for the game and the
right.
love for things. So I feel like I can teach anybody how to teach. So I'm looking for that passion for people that genuinely love people. And as you mentioned, treat people like people. Like, I need that. You're in a service industry.
Yes.
Yeah. You have to be able to serve your customer. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have the audacity to ask your customers what do they need, I mean, it's simple marketing and business
yes.
tactics.
101.
Like, 101. And it's so frustrating to me when I see educators and educational leaders mm-hmm. thinking that they know the answers for how they should raise or educate our children.
Yes.
So the hiring practice, to me, shouldn't even be about I don't even really look at their resume.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hired you. Like, you,
yes.
I was part of the hiring process
yes,
for you. And I'm like, I don't care what stock that I
yes.
It's cool, whatever.
Yes.
And then when we had that conversation, I said, like, he's the right one because I knew that passion.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that he liked kids. I don't understand why educational leaders aren't following that approach. They talk the same way we talk, but when it comes down to it, mm-hmm. they don't follow that approach. I don't understand.
I think a lot of times is that they get caught up in that textbook mentality,
mm-hmm.
whereas though that if it's in the textbook, then it has to be right,
mm-hmm.
because why would we have a textbook?
Mm-hmm.
Why would they create a book if it's not right? But
mm-hmm.
sometimes you have to close the textbook, and you just have to look at people and make
mm-hmm.
sure that the person that you are selecting to go in that classroom for 6.5 hours a day is a person that can actually be in the classroom and wants to be in the classroom.
Wants to be in there, right? That is true. I want somebody that's going to be able to change the perspective of how students view education.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about this all the time in terms of, and we give the message to our kids.
Yes.
I asked them, I said, what's the point of purpose of a teacher? And they say to teach. I said, you're wrong. I said, that's where you're wrong, because it makes you passive.
Yes.
You're waiting for them to give you something.
Mm-hmm.
I said, the job of the teacher, really, if they're doing their job and you're doing what you're supposed to be doing and taking your education, the teacher should come in there, right? Here's what I need you to study.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the date that is due.
Yes.
And walk out the classroom.
Yes.
So I need
you.
To, as a teacher, as an educator early on, I need to be able to put that seed into these kids' minds
mm-hmm.
so then they really become ownerships of their own educational
mm-hmm.
process. But we are caught in this. I don't know if they're trying to compare it to like regular companies where you're creating microphones and they're trying to take
the
that approach
line.
Right, and trying to put it in there. And, oh, well, it doesn't fit this spec and
mm-hmm.
it doesn't, we gotta, it doesn't make sense to me. And it is so frustrating to me as an educational leader
mm-hmm.
to see people go through the field that way because these kids are suffering because
yes,
of it.
Absolutely.
It's a shame.
Yes.
Yeah, you know what? And what you were saying, I don't know if we're sending each other brain waves or anything, but everything you're saying is just spot on
mm-hmm.
because you can't teach passion. You're either passionate about it or you're not.
Right.
And the great teachers that you've had mm-hmm. and that you've observed, mm-hmm. they don't even use a textbook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hey, let's take a look at page 185 just to reinforce what I'm telling you
right.
here. But they're not locked into that box.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have the key to that box and you open it up and you look around and you look at the body language and kids are perking up. And another thing you started to say was about there can't be one teacher in the room.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you walk in any boardroom mm-hmm. or any classroom, when there's more than one facilitator, things are happening.
Right.
That's when you're generating not just one idea. There can't be just one way to do this.
Right.
You know, let's look at other ways to do it. How about, you know, you look around, pick a leader out of this class. Well,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I'm going to choose all 35 kids,
mm-hmm.
which is a ridiculous amount of kids to have in one class, but
right.
that's where we are.
right?
Now, look at the most successful schools in the country.
Uh-huh.
All right. Now, you had mentioned you're going down to Atlanta soon,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, look at the Ron Clark Academy.
Mm-hmm.
What's Ron Clark have
mm-hmm.
that we don't have?
Mm-hmm.
An unlimited supply of money.
Yep.
He's got sponsors,
yep.
you know? Instead, we depend on most of our taxpayers would rather have their trash picked up than exemplary schools.
Right.
And they act accordingly.
Right.
So as long as we're using that formula, you know, property tax, that's not going to work. We're not putting the money where it should go.
Mm.
But a lot of companies are seeing that, and they may be sponsoring schools, but it has to be not in the short term.
Right.
It has
right.
to be, okay, look, man, right. what do you want to do next?
Right.
Well, let's ask everybody.
Right. Even I feel like educators still lean on funds and lack of funding a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I come from the hip hop generation who created something out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So that mentality of not having money, it was a part of my existence since I was born. So
right.
it was like, I'm going to create something out of nothing. I got $100 in my budget. That's what I got to work with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make something happen magical here. And then I think that a lot of educators are saying, well, these kids are failing because I don't have money. I don't have funding. That's nonsense. They're failing because you ain't willing to go the extra mile and think outside of the box and be creative.
Right.
On your own right and give up that control in your classroom. I think money obviously plays a big part into it. It would be nice to have it, but we got to work with what we got,
absolutely.
Right? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And we can still push to get
yes.
the money and things, but right now, the state mm-hmm. that we're in right now, there's no money.
Yeah,
there's no bread.
It's the, I'm trying to make a dollar out of 15 cents.
Yeah.
So that's one of the quotes that I use is when I'm in my environment and I know that the school doesn't have it,
mm-hmm.
then I have a choice. Either the kids don't get it or mm-hmm. I go into my pocket.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's what it boils down
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
a lot of people is willing to go into their pocket.
Listen, my family, we didn't have a whole lot of money growing up, right? So go home, might be rice. And you know, the cupboard, maybe mm-hmm. some milk or whatever. And then, the truth, you're not going to the store to get any more, you know, groceries.
Yes.
You don't have no money.
Yes.
So what are you gonna do with this?
Yes.
All right, either I can cook the rice, mm-hmm. put some milk in it, put some sugar in it, or we got some sweet, whatever.
Yes, we got rice.
Tomorrow we come in, it's just rice and like you
yes.
create something like out of necessity.
Yes.
And I just think that there's a lot of just not because I don't think people are passionate about it. A lot of people are passionate about it enough. To be able to say, all right, I got this. It's STEM at the end of the day. I'm designing and redesigning my classroom with what I have.
Well, here's the other thing is that when you have teachers that have been there since 1980,
mm.
they only know one way of doing things. And they're stuck in a box.
It's a poor business model.
So now what happens is that when you get a teacher that's new to, I want to say, the profession, they prevent them from being as creative,
right.
as making a dollar out of 15 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Because now what they're saying is that, oh, this is the way you want to do it, new girl?
Right.
We don't do it here.
Yeah, yeah.
And now you become an outcast.
So we're talking about culture and climate at that particular point in time.
Yeah, culture and climate. I mean, a student of mine contacted me recently, and she said the parting words of one of her professors included, whatever you do, don't hang out in the teacher's lounge.
That's so true.
Yes.
I never ate there. Never did. I always ate. First of all, I had kids coming to my classroom, so I didn't even have time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's just frustrating. Even when I was in the classroom, I'd tell stories all the time. I would drive to work and be like, all right, well, what am I going to teach them today?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, I mean, I had the lesson plan because I had to have the lesson plan, but it was a matter of, all right, this is the type of kids that I have. This is what needs to happen today. All right. Let's go out here and do what we got to do. I know what the curriculum was, and I followed it as best I could, but the kids kind of drove the content of the classroom.
Now, short story, just to piggyback on what he was saying. So when I left Uptown,
mm-hmm.
right, now some of the teachers, they laughed. It's like, oh, you did all of this, and now you don't have a job. And a lot of times when I do stuff, I'm not doing it for me. I'm doing it so that when the kids go home and the question is asked, what did you do today? This is what we did.
Right.
So now it starts a conversation piece at the table with their parents about what they did. So now when they return, they're looking to do it again.
Again, right, yeah.
You know what, that's an excellent point, too. I tell people all the time, how do you want to be talked about at the dinner table?
Yes.
So, you know, hey. We can complain or we could get together and make some things happen. Yeah. And if they're saying positive things, and it's amazing how you get parents on your side when they think you have the same goal as them, and that's the creation of this whole person.
Right.
Yes. That always works.
That is really, really interesting. So you have this book out, right?
Yes, sir.
50 Great Things Leaders Do. What was the inspiration behind this book? Why'd you write it?
Well, the first edition that I self-published back in 2006, I was at a conference in Minneapolis with 12 of my colleagues. We got a grant to go to this conference. It was Johnson's Renaissance National Leadership Conference, and we were all there. And part of our breakout session in a room, I'd say we had about 200 attendees in our room for this particular session. As each of my colleagues went around and started telling their stories, I decided I need to start writing this stuff down because we as educators don't get together enough and tell our stories.
Right.
And then what happens to the stories? You know, something else comes along. Like, for instance, when there's a tragedy at a school, do you have to call up anybody? Do you call up a TV station and say, hey, man, we're having a tragedy right now. Can I get you to come cover this?
Right.
Nah, because they're already circling.
Yeah.
Something great happens. Your jazz band just won the state competition. You got to pry people out of their seats to get them over there and cover something positive like that.
Right.
So anyway, I started writing down the stories, and I was also at the time always been interested in organizational behavior, you know, whether it's, you know, business model, an education model, or no model at all. And what we discovered was when you tell a student, especially a young student, now we were at a middle school at the time, 10 through 14 year olds. If you tell a 10 year old that you're a leader, guess what? They believe they're a leader. Yeah. You tell a 10-year-old is smart, then, hey, guess what? They believe you. If you tell them they can't do something or they can't accomplish something, then they start to believe that, too. So anyway, we started to create this leadership environment through climate and culture. And I started to write down all the stories. I wanted to make a book that you could read on a plane ride because, let's face it, if it's not a short read and it doesn't have a lot of pictures in it, none of my friends are reading it. So that was the premise on that. Another premise was I started asking kids, teachers, parents, give me one leadership trait that you think everyone should have.
Right.
And we came up with 50, and the way that I wanted it to work was you can take these 50 great things, put them in a jar, dump them out on a table, pick five.
Right.
And these five things will make you a better person and you a better leader and the people around you. For instance, they don't have to be done in order. Number one, raise the bar. Expect a lot from yourself or no one else will. Don't have to raise the bar to do number 10, have fun. Or to do number 12, you see something on the floor, pick it up. Or number 14, random acts of greatness. But you can just take these things. And I connected them to research, my own stories and other people's stories. Literally, some of the stories in that book are less than a year old, and other ones are 30 years old. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. And what I found was other people, whether you're an educator, a parent, a business leader, you make some connection with other people's stories, and you build relationships.
Right, right.
You make these connections, build relationships, and start getting other people passionate about what you're passionate about. And if they're not passionate about it, they will discover their passion. They'll start dreaming so big that it freaks people out.
Right.
How about that? Tell the kid, you know what? Start dreaming bigger. Bigger. That dream's not big enough, kid. Wow. And guess what? They do.
Right.
They do. They believe you because it's true.
Yep.
And the tipping point occurs when they not only look in the mirror differently to see who they are, but they look in the mirror differently to see who they can become.
Be the possibility.
How about that? You know, I mean, I'm still dreaming. I'm still chasing those dreams, catching those dreams, coming up with a plan. And, you know, I'll let you know.
Yeah.
I'll let you know how it turns out.
Listening to you, I feel like you can change the title to 50 Great Things That People Do. Because at the end of the day, you were talking about small things that anybody could do to for self-improvement. And one of the things that, you know, we just mentioned not too long ago is that you need to be able to dream big. And I think too many people are dreaming way too small. And yes, you're accomplishing your dreams, but you're not really progressing anywhere because your dreams are too small.
No, you know what? I never, when I'm at my age, my feet hit the floor, I'm like, yeah. Personal victory every morning, but also never woke up one day and said, this day is going to be so average.
Right.
I can't wait. I can't wait to be average.
Right.
You know, I'm going to hit up a big bowl of mediocrity as soon as I get out of here. But that, you know, that doesn't happen.
Right.
But the leadership model too, is that the reason I use the word leaders in the book is because we got to get rid of that follower model. You know, I mean, when I went to school, when I was in middle school, in high school, in college, there was a finite number of leaders because that's what the model predicted.
Right.
Flip the model because that's where we all are. Mm-hmm. Give everybody an opportunity. Is everyone going to accept the opportunity? No, but they have the opportunity. That's where the heretics, the outliers, and the disruptors come in.
Yeah, I mean, in the days and times that we live in right now, especially with technology and the way that I can literally pick up my phone and talk to somebody all the way across the world, I feel like there's no reason for you not to be successful on some level. Like, unless, there's tragedy that could happen, but I feel like the playing field is a lot more level right now than it used to be. I mean, yes, there's still things in society that's going to hold certain people back, but at the end of the day, you make a decision on whether you're going to push through that or you're going to let it, you know, succumb you. But I feel like we all have an opportunity to take advantage of it. And I think a big part of it in the beginning is your perception and your dreams. Like, for example, when I was growing up, we never went on vacation. So the world was Glassboro, New Jersey to me. That was it. So I accomplished that. I was in Glassboro or whatever. But then I got older and instead there was a big world out there. So I continue to encourage people to set dreams and goals that it may seem ridiculous to somebody else, but I'm gonna set, you know, this goal. Like, my goal right now is to win a Nobel Peace Prize. At the end of the day, that's what I'm going for.
That's it.
A lot of people ain't gonna think, oh, you ain't gonna get, I don't really even care what they think, but you have to dream big and you have to go after it and want to do it. The other piece, though, is that some of us, on the flip side, our dreams are bigger than what our work ethic is.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's a problem in itself.
I mean, it's okay to dream a dream, but at some point in time, you got to put some action behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you truly desire to have what you have or what you want, then you have to, every day, got to grind.
Right.
Yeah, well, I mean, what are you spending your time doing? If you spend your time just thinking about it, you know, now that you're a great thinker, become a great actor.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Take that shift your own paradigm sometimes. Right. But you were talking about perception, and let me tell you a quick story that's in the book. My last 17 years in public education was as a middle school principal, and I absolutely loved that age group because you got them. You got them when they're 10, man. You could really turn some heads around.
Mm.
But we had an African American gentleman working in our building. It was second career for him. He was an engineer, and then retired. Got bored, came and became an instructional aide in our school. The year Barack Obama was elected, he's from, Ron is his name, from Atlantic City, grew up, family, all from Atlantic City.
Probably related to Kareem, but go ahead.
Yeah, probably, no doubt. But he tells his story to the kids, and where he was the first in line, waiting for the polls to open in his district in Atlantic City to be the first to vote for what could be the first African-American president.
Mm.
Because he was told when he was in high school by his guidance counselor, engineering, oh, no, not for a black person. You can't do that. And he shifted his direction a little bit for a little while until it got back on course. But he carried with him, and he showed me in this wallet, pictures of all his deceased relatives.
Wow.
That, sorry.
It's all right.
That couldn't be there because to vote for the first African American president.
Right.
And he carried that with him.
Mm.
And the point is shift of perception.
Right.
Now, every black kid in America can look and see, hey, man, I could be president.
Uh-huh.
Look, all why
right.
not?
Right.
You know, same thing with a woman. If you're voting for a woman senator, or you're getting women involved in careers that aren't normally related to a female, man, we got to expand. And like you said, man, now's the opportunity. Now the playing field is leveling,
right,
for all of us.
Biggest thing I heard from that story from the gentleman was he had a why. He had a reason. Yeah. And then, you know, when he went astray, he didn't have that reason. Yeah. Somebody took that reason from him, so he went astray. So he had a reason to do what he did. And, you know, one of the most powerful things we can do as educators is to get those kids to realize what their why is. Mm-hmm. Why do you get out of bed every morning and come to school? Mm-hmm. Not to learn. That's not your why. Ooh. Why? What is your why? And once you have that why and that strong passion about it, when you hit that difficult time, you continue to push through it because you know what your why is. You know what it is. So that, you know, that story is really, really, that part resonates with me with that story.
And then it becomes a lot easier for you to go through the trials and tribulations of life.
It does.
Because they're coming.
They're going to come daily. No doubt. Hourly. It's going to happen. But when you hold on to your why, it makes it a little bit easier because all it does is reinforce the importance of you being able to do what you need to do.
That is awesome. But so where can you find the book? If you're interested in copying the book?
You can go to my website, inspire-leadership.com. You'll find a plethora of information on there, including a link to buy my book, or you can email me directly, if you want an autographed copy, or you know what, I'd say bulk orders. Just email me for bulk orders.
Yeah,
buy 2,000 of them.
Yeah, that's definitely
inspire-leadership.com.
Yeah, that's definitely some good stuff that you got going on here. I do follow you on Twitter, and I see your post every once in a while, and it inspires me. And I look at it like, oh, okay, got it. Let's be epic. You know what I mean? And keep it moving. So continue to do that work. At some point in time, the Empowerment Perspective Group will be having a conference leadership/camp for young men and women. I definitely want you to be a part of that.
Let's do it.
So make that happen, and make that
okay,
going.
We got some contracts.
Yeah.
No more verbal agreements.
So before we get out of here, we like to have a little fun on our show and flip it and talk about some things here and there. One of the things that we're going to talk about is your top three. What are you listening to musically right now?
Playlist.
Wow. You know what? That's a great question, because right before I got here, I was trying to put some music from my PC to my iPhone 8. And, you know, Apple and
Windows 8.
Yeah. So I was going back to some old school John Fogerty. Mm. So I was just, you know, getting his greatest hits, you know, downloaded to my phone. Mm. I got some... There's another song that's going to sound weird to you. I don't know if you've ever heard it. White Punks on Dope, The Tubes.
I'm going to have to look that one up.
Check that one up. It was a blast from the past. I had run across it, and I'm like, yeah, this is crazy, man. And there's a song by Prince. If you remember, he had a little conflict with his record label at the time. So he came out with an album with just a symbol on it, formerly known as the artist. And there's an inappropriate song on there, and I'll just leave it at that.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I got you.
How about you?
Nobody ever asked. It's the first time I'm on a podcast. Somebody flipped it on me.
Yeah, he's smart.
I love it. What am I listening to right now? I'm a big J. Cole fan, so he just got a new album out. I'm trying to listen to that and get a feel for that. Actually, I posted something on Facebook talking about wanting to be happy. And one of the things I was going to follow up on was having people follow me and do something that they would never, ever do. And one of the things was to get an album that you would never, ever think that you would listen to.
Yeah.
So I started with Amy Winehouse because it was completely left of what I would even think it was. And I enjoyed the album, you know, and listening to her music. And it's just
talented.
Yeah, she's really, really talented. And then my third one. What else am I listening to? It was something else. There was a song artist. What's her name? Maya, I think it was. It came out long back in. Jay-Z had a song with her back in the day. She has a new album out. It ain't worth listening to, but I listened to it. So those are the things. Right now I'm in a space of just trying things new. You know what I'm saying? And trying to just expand, you know, my horizons in all areas, especially in music. What you got, sir?
Oh, well, here's the thing.
Still listening to Commodores?
Well, I am listening to Commodores. My phone broke, so all my songs and everything else was done. So right now, I'm trying to play catch up. I'm still listening to Jay-Z's album, the 444. Actually, I listened to some of his songs on the way over. I'm still listening to some of the old school hip hop, so Eric B and Rakim, the KRS-One. I still have the Roots that I'm listening to. So I try to have a wide range of inspiring people that had to overcome some adversity in order to be able to get this platform that they're on. So
got you. So I'm kind of also backwards because I feel like I'm thinking too much all day, so I need some dumb music too. just some background elevator music. Yeah.
I go to dumb videos for that.
How you go to dumb videos? Yes, you do. You do go to some dumb videos. Man. Absolutely. Movie. You a movie guy? You like watching movies?
You know what? I am, and I got rejuvenated with the Star Wars movies because my oldest daughter, I got her into them, and we're anticipating a Solo coming out. Next week, I think it comes out.
All right. Well, the way I was going was, what's the last movie that made you choked up?
Ooh, wow. Oh, man.
You know you got the lump in your throat.
Cry a lot?
You know what?
You cry a lot.
I'll tell you what. I'm a passionate, emotional person.
All right.
And so it depends on who you talk to.
Yeah,
but you know what? We could stay with the Star Wars theme, man. I never thought Han Solo was going to get whacked.
He cried.
I didn't cry, but I was choked up. I dropped my soda and popcorn. Yeah, right in the IMAX theater.
So what about when Leia passed?
Well, you know what? That's a great segue, too, because getting my oldest daughter into it, she was posting on social media about Princess Leia being a female role model for leadership, which was kind of cool.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Princess Leia, man. When I was 17, she was
keep it PG.
She was a very, very powerful leader.
You had the picture on the wall. Yeah, I got you. Yeah, I understand that. That is
she's really showing off her leadership skills.
Yeah, in a different way. Very influential. Love it. So my man has a running question that we ask everybody. So I'm gonna turn this segment over to him.
So my question, and I've been trying to get people on the petty bandwagon because I'm petty. I'm petty by nature. Yeah. He's a big group called Naughty by Nature.
Yeah, I'm petty by nature.
So where do you stand on your level of pettiness?
I mean, it depends on what we're talking about.
Let's talk wedding rings.
Wedding rings?
Yeah.
Man, don't leave home without it.
Don't leave home without it, man.
I got three of them.
Why do you have three?
Don't leave home without it.
So it sounds like the message has been given to you somewhere along the line is don't you leave this house without this on your hand.
Yeah, well, I mean, also, well, the wedding ring, first of all, the original wedding ring I got when we were married.
How much you spent?
My wife spent about $125 on it. It was white gold.
How much? She spent $125 on you.
Well, yeah, I guess it came out of the same pot at that point, but it was two sizes too small. I couldn't get it off for about 8 years.
Was that by design?
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, how much did I spend on her rings? A little bit more. Yeah.
Why is that?
Why is that? You're smart. You got a book.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? It's because... I probably can't say this out loud, but because that's just the way it's set up for us.
How about this? Because you don't want to speak on it, how about just admitting that you're petty? We'll just leave it alone.
Yeah, right. Well, my wife is.
Let me ask you this question. Does your wife have a calendar that you are forced to put stuff on?
Google calendar.
Yeah, not a Google calendar. She
got the whole school
with a pen.
So my wife is the same way.
Make sure all your stuff's. Wait a minute. Hold a second. Where are you going? It's not on the calendar. Like what do you mean? What do you mean you got a podcast today at 3:30?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't see it on the calendar. You know, but I see there's just canned food drive this morning, same day. Why is that on the calendar? Well, people got to eat, hun.
Can't sell. Yeah, the calendar is universal. I find peace to know that someone else is going through.
You're not the only one.
Mine's not electronic either. That would be a problem. Mm-hmm. I was listening to some other podcast where the guy was like, The wife had scheduled, he went to took the wife's car, then put gas in the car. So she scheduled on the calendar for him to put gas in her car.
So I said, that's Friday crazy. Evening, you take the car.
Yeah, man, yep. Hopefully she don't run out on Thursday.
That is terrible. That is terrible. But any last words? We're going to wrap this podcast up because I got some children that's been hanging with me all day.
Listen, you're going to pay. Happy.
Yeah, what we going to
silence totally for this whole hour.
Oh, they were screaming wah-wah all the way from Millville to Hamilton. Hey, look, here they come right now. Yes. Come here. Timbone, come here. Jaden, come here. Melanie, come here. Come on around here. These are my lovely children mm-hmm. and my goddaughter mm-hmm. on the podcast. Can yes. somebody tell these lovely people what you guys were screaming in my ear all the way from the radio station here?
We weren't screaming, but so he said, we're doing would you rather have free McDonald's or free Burger King? And then he said, well, would you rather have free Wawa or free McDonald's?
And you started and then, screaming.
And then we said Wawa. And then he said, what would you rather have Wawa or internet? And then we said Wawa.
What was the song y'all was singing? Go ahead and say it. Y'all ready?
Ready?
You ready? One, two, three.
Wawa.
No, that's not how you were doing it. You gotta do it the way you was doing it in the car.
You wanna get
Wawa coffee in it?
No, they want.
You're gonna get us kicked out.
See that? This is what I was dealing with. My bosses are in the building.
We have to change our song. Cashier.
Yes. Let's talk about, we were talking about teachers, right? Yes. Who was your favorite teacher so far?
Mr. Seavis.
Talk to the microphone.
Mr. Seavis.
Why'd you like Mr. Seavis? What was so special about him?
Because he was funny and he let us watch movies.
Hey, man, I'll let you watch movies.
Yeah, but you're not my teacher.
I am the ultimate. I am your ultimate teacher. No. Don't forget that. But he was funny and let you watch movies. That is awesome. Jaden, what about you? Who's your favorite teacher? You can say daddy. It's okay. No, who is it? Melanie, you know who yours is?
My homeroom teacher, Miss Gallagher.
Why do you like Miss Gallagher?
Because she's so funny.
She's funny.
And before our podcast, she always gives us Smarties.
Smarties, all right, okay. So the moral of the story, educators, is that children love people that make them laugh and make them feel comfortable in the classroom, that makes them feel like a human being, like we were saying, Dr. Vanessa was saying earlier. You heard it from the mouths of honest children. You yes. have to make sure that you have that connection with them. Kids do not learn from people they do not like. So they have to. You have to get into that space where they, respect you and like you, and then you'll be able to do anything you want with them, and they'll go through a brick wall for them.
Absolutely.
So we're gonna wrap this thing up, Dr. Vanesky. Any last words of wisdom for anyone that's out there listening on any topic: wedding rings, calendars, music, education, leadership? It doesn't matter.
I just picked something up from one of your daughters. If you're a teacher, give as a reward a Smarty, not a dum-dum. Mm.
Yes. Love it.
Be passionate about it or don't do it. And thanks, Kareem, Demiso, for having me.
Absolutely. Spence, any last words before we get out of here?
Embrace your pettiness.
As usual. Pettiness is coming. Embrace your pettiness.
Yes, pettiness. Season of the petty.
The season of petty. Listen, June 16th, we're on the radio, 99.9 FM, 1240 AM, SNJ Today. The Empowerment Perspective Podcast is moving to the radio. We still going to have the podcast. Don't forget that. We still going to have y'all following it out there on iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, LinkedIn. Twitter, all the social outlets. Not Snapchat yet. I'm too old for that. I got to figure that out yet. You know what I mean? Maybe my daughter can help me out with that one. YouTube, we got the video element on YouTube. Yes. So make sure you get that out. The website, I'm bringing it down for a couple of days because I got to revamp it with some things, but it's going to be back up within the end of next week. We're going down to the A, the end of June. So make sure you tune in down there. We're going to probably got like 4 or 5 podcasts jumping off. We're down there speaking at that conference. We got hit up for Texas at the Texas Juvenile Department of Justice down there. We're thinking about getting down there. Vegas coming up also in July. Some big things are happening. We just keep growing and growing and growing. And again, the purpose of this thing is to empower people, to give people information, to be able to strengthen families, strengthen themselves and kids and everything. I just want everybody to win at the end of the day. I want everybody to be epic at the end of the day, and want everybody to go out there and live the life that you really, really, really want to live. Dream big, yes. But understand that you dream. The bigger the dream, the harder the work has to be in. It is Saturday, and this is like the I'm going on 10th hour right now of radio podcast, and got my crew with me. We're going to just keep grinding it out. Kareem, you right there with me, and your friend who we going to get her on a podcast one day so she can talk about you all day long. Matter of fact, you have your own podcast. It's going to be called The Kareem Perspective, and we're going to go in on Kareem all day long on that one. So until next time, everybody, stay empowered.
Yes.
Thanks, guys.